Some numbers in the firearms debate. I'm David Brancaccio. After the mass shootings in Colorado and Georgia, the Biden administration is weighing a series of executive actions to limit some firearms, and Congress is facing pressure to act. Often lost in debate over mayhem versus rights are the human and dollar costs involved. Marketplace's Nova Safo is here with some numbers.
Yeah, David, gun violence's highest costs are, of course, lives lost and lives altered, but there are other costs that can be measured to help inform public policy, everything from lost income and tax revenue to medical expenses. And we turn to Ted Miller to help us understand those costs. He's been conducting research in this area for decades. He's with the Pacific Institute for Research and Evaluation, which does a lot of statistical analysis. Well, Miller's research shows the total societal costs from firearms, from violence, accidental injuries, and deaths, is at least $280 billion a year. Here's how he breaks that down.
The largest cost is the cost of pain, suffering, and lost quality of life. The second largest are for work loss, including both wage work and household work.
And others have backed up some of Miller's numbers. A separate group of researchers estimated $48 billion in medical and work loss costs alone, David.
And seen this way, how do we think about who pays these costs?
Miller's research suggests that these costs are being spread out unevenly. Here he is again.
The quality of life costs are $214 billion of this. Most of that falls on the victims and their families. So the question becomes, who pays the other $66 billion? Some of that falls on employers because people had health insurance.
And it also falls on governments with lost tax revenue and other expenses, David.
Nova, thank you. Now to the fully laden cargo ship still wedged diagonally across Egypt's Suez Canal. Never before in the canal's 150-year history. From Cairo, the BBC's Sally Nabil has more.
The huge size of the ship, as well as the heavy cargo on board, seem to be complicating rescue efforts. Tugboats and diggers are trying to dislodge it, but it might take a couple of days. The ship is 400 meters long and nearly 60 meters wide, with around 120,000 containers on board. Experts say if attempts to free the ship fail, Egyptians will eventually have to unload the cargo. The incident has created long queues of ships waiting to pass through the strategic canal. They have now been diverted to the old water channel in order to clear traffic.
There were fairly high winds at the time the ship turned cockeyed. Markets, Dow and S&P futures are up 0.2% now. The NASDAQ future is up 0.4%. It's an old saw that just about everyone in America thinks they're middle class. What do we really know about how poor or wealthy we are compared to the rest of society or our work peers or the people at church, synagogue, or mosque? There's new data showing our perceptions of this are very uneven. As part of our ongoing Reimagining the Economy project, let's welcome Stephanie Stancheva, a professor of economics at Harvard, who co-authored the research.
Thank you for having me.
There's been writing, I mean, at least a perception in the past that everybody thinks they're middle class, even if they're low income or maybe quite affluent. But your current research here suggests that broadly we kind of know where we stand.
Yes, that's true. So we have this new project where we match people to their tax returns so that we can see exactly where they rank relative to others, like people with the same education or people who work in the same firm, and we ask them to rank themselves among these various groups. And on balance, people are quite accurate. But this pattern that you mentioned, namely that we tend to think we're more middle class than we actually are, is still there. So people who are actually ranked towards the bottom of the income distribution tend to think they're ranked higher than they truly are. And those who are ranked towards the top believe they're ranked lower than they actually are.
So we know ourselves to some extent, with some exceptions that we could talk about. But how are we at guessing how others are doing? I suppose it varies depending on if you're just asking like random other people or if they're part of some kind of cohort or group.
That's exactly right. One of the big patterns that we see is that we don't quite realize how much more others in our firm or in our sector or with the same education are making. You know, those who make, for instance, the least in a given firm don't quite realize they're the ones who are making the least.
So if people are off in perceiving inequality around them or where they stand, as you do this experimentation, do you ever tell them what the truth is? And how do they react?
We do. People who are told that they actually rank lower than they thought, so who are initially too optimistic about their own position, those people now start to think inequality is much less fair. On the other hand, it seems that bad news weighs much more heavily than good news, because the people who are told that they rank higher than they thought, those people don't change their views. So bad news is very salient and seems to really affect people. Good news, not so much here.
The paper is called Social Position and Fairness Views, published in the National Bureau of Economic Research. We've been talking to the co-author, Stephanie Stancheva, an econ professor at Harvard and founder of the Social Economics Lab. Professor, thank you.
Thank you.
As part of the conversation about going beyond just fixing what the pandemic broke, we've been talking to experts to help us reimagine the economy. That's the phrase to look for at marketplace.org. I'm David Brancaccio, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.